Oria looking expectantly at me, and the queen's mask turned my way. I can hardly refuse. I wish I could peek over my shoulder for a glance at Merity, but she's probably wearing her usual look of indifference. My mouth is so dry, all I can do is nod. As Hadrian fixes the gold pin to my tunic, just beneath my two necromancer's pins, my stomach churns. I haven't done anything to earn this honor, and no matter what the queen says, I doubt King Wilding would approve. Given how I've failed to protect him in Cardia, he'd probably rip the pin off my chest for pretending to be a hero I'm not. I look down at the pin and remind myself it's only temporary. Just until we find Duke Nevet. And we will.
Now that that's settled, Hadrian says, stepping back to admire my decorated tunic.
I need your help, as I mentioned. The last time I saw His Majesty, very early this morning, we had received a raven from a baroness in Elsinore province.
He pulls a piece of parchment from the pocket of his gold-trimmed doublet and hands it to me.
There are reports of shade attacks in the area, and for some reason, the monsters aren't retreating to the Deadlands as they usually would. With all my men currently committed to the search for King Wilding, I need you to go to Elsinore and put the shade to rest before any more Carthians lose their lives.
What?
As the word leaves my lips, Hadrian frowns. I cross my arms.
Forgive me, but by my count, there are more necromancers in Elsinore than there are in Grenweir. Why can't they handle their own shades?
I'm needed here. I have to help Jax and Simeon search for the Shadebaiter and His Majesty.
Even as I speak, my thoughts circle around the idea of a shade coming out of the Deadlands to attack a province. They hate daylight. They wouldn't have a reason except...
Vain once again creeps into my thoughts. If the Shadebaiter I mentioned can control the monsters, he might be responsible for the attacks in Elsinore too, I say slowly, thinking aloud. Whether he's the one who took the king or not, he has to be stopped.
I agree, Hadrian says at last. And the guards will find him eventually. But helping the people of Elsinore must come first, as they have no more necromancers of their own. They need someone with training to slay the monsters before they get any stronger.
No more necromancers? I blurt. What are you...
They're dead.
The queen's chill voice raises goose flesh on my arms.
Valoria shivers beside me.
All 8 of Elsinore's necromancers were slain by a shade. I wish we'd known sooner. Not that we've been in much position to help, but it seems to have happened as quickly as the raven flies.
And so, my serpent, please say you'll do this for me.
Hadrian's voice simmers with barely controlled sorrow.
Don't make me beg. My eldest grandfather is missing. I can't worry about the people of Elsinore dying on my watch, too. And they have no one to deal with shades now.
He lowers his voice, leaning toward me.
I'll feel so much better if you see to it.
Please, Sparrow. You're the best. As His Majesty knew, and you're the only one I trust.
He draws back, his eyes glistening, and takes both my hands in his. I open my mouth, but as I look from Valoria's pale face to the queen clutching the arm of the throne for support, the words get stuck in my throat. Something doesn't feel right. King Wilding never once ordered me away from his side, no matter what was happening in the other provinces. And leaving Grenweir City with him missing seems wrong. Maybe Elsinore does need me. But Grenwyr needs me more than ever, too. Her Majesty echoes my thoughts.
Find my husband for me, Sparrow.
The Queen pleads, sinking onto the throne.
I trust you more than any of the guards. I know you can do it. Then, of course, head to Elsinore afterward, by all means.
I bow to her. Yes, Majesty. After all, with King Wilding gone, the Queen is the one in charge, not Hadrian.
Overruled, Hadrian says, frowning apologetically. Sparrow, please pack your things and head to Elsinore at once, to Abathel Castle. Since Baroness Abathel is the one who wrote to us, she should direct you to where you're needed most. And hurry.
His expression is grim.
When word of the king's disappearance gets out, we'll have panic in the streets, and it could cost you precious hours.
Didn't you hear what Elda's grandmother said?
Valoria demands. Hadrian nods, still frowning.
I did.
And as acting regent, I'm overruling Elda's grandmother's wishes, with all due respect. He runs a hand through his blonde hair.
I'm sorry. I'm just doing what I think is right.
Looking pleadingly at me, he adds,
Tell me, Sparrow, if it came to saving him or his people, which would His Majesty have you choose?
I don't need to think about the answer.
His people.
He's always sacrificing himself for us, after all.
Then you understand why I think he'd want you to go to Elsinore.
I nod. Resigned to the task. But something is still bothering me. I ask in a whisper,
Why did Her Majesty appoint you regent, Highness? Is she unwell?
It's the law, Valoria says quickly, like she's just remembered.
The laws of inheritance haven't changed in Carthia in well over 200 years, like everything else. And the law in place before his reign said that if the current ruler could no longer sit on the throne for any reason, the crown would pass to the next living heir who'd come of age.
She blinks at Hadrian, her voice getting softer as she continues.
And since our father is dead, and mother's dead, and Hadrian's just turned 18...
The burden of the crown will pass to me if King Wilding isn't found in the next 30 days.
Hadrian finishes.
He seems to have aged several years since I saw him last, at his birthday. If he had been born just a few weeks later, the queen would be the one giving orders now.
But it seems I have no choice other than to follow Hadrian's command.
I spoke too rashly before. Forgive me. I'll leave it to you to decide,
he adds softly, as though reading my thoughts.
I trust Jax and Simeon will do a fine job leading the search for the king. But if you really think you should stay, I'll respect your choice.
I'm glad to hear you aren't letting all that power go to your head, big brother.
Valoria chews on her lower lip as she studies the prince.
If it ever does, I'll have to put you in your place, understand?
Her tone is light, but her eyes are somber. Hadrian gives her a deep bow.
You have my word, Your Highness.
He straightens, grinning.
And should I fail, I shall throw myself upon the mercy of your blade.
Shaking my head at their banter, I think of King Wilding's shrouded figure lying prone in the grass, waiting for me to fetch his spirit. I think of the peace of the Deadlands he never gets for long, all for the sake of his people.
I'll go to Elsinore, I announce.
He'd want that, as you said. Twisting the newest pin on my tunic, I add. I'll need a partner for the journey, a fellow necromancer. In case I need to enter the Deadlands while I'm away.
Name your choice,
Hadrian says at once, his face relaxing somewhat now that I've agreed to his plan. And Sparrow. A note of longing breaks his voice, surprising me.
Choose wisely. It would kill me if anything happened to you.
I don't have to think long. Master Simbri. Now, more than ever, I need her guidance.
Ms. Crowther? Hadrian calls. You asked His Majesty about security jobs at the palace yesterday. You're still in need of work?
Meredy nods, a hint of pink appearing beneath her freckles. She marches to the bottom of the steps to face Hadrian, Lysander prowling alongside her. I look a question at her, but she ignores me. I thought she'd be returning to Lorness any day now, once she'd convinced herself I wasn't going to touch another drop of potion.
I'll pay you and your beast twice what you'd make as guards if you'll accompany my serpent to Elsinore, Hadrian says evenly. Will you protect her as she defends my people?
I don't need any, I protest. But Meredy interrupts. Accepted. She props a hand on her hip, taking a long look at Hadrian. But, forgive me, Highness. Weren't you one of the last people to see King Wilding before he went missing? I saw you two wandering the corridors this morning. You waved to me, remember?
Of course.
Hadrian's expression doesn't change.
But His Majesty and I parted ways just moments after we passed you. King Wilding was hungry, as the dead often are, and headed for the kitchen to get a honey cake.
I've no idea what happened after that. Though I'm sure you weren't trying to accuse me of anything. He smiles a little stiffly as Meredy gazes placidly back at him, her feelings and thoughts well hidden.
I was simply suggesting that there may be some detail in your memory that's been overlooked. Something that could help explain who took the king, she says coolly.
A shadowy figure down the hall, an odd sound.
Rest assured, I take no offense. Hadrian says swiftly. We're all on edge of the king's absence.
He leans forward, the steps allowing him to tower over Meredy when there normally wouldn't be much difference in height.
Still, I'm sure you'll take excellent care of my serpent. I have every confidence.
The doors to the throne room rattle.
For Vaya's sake, let us in!
Simeon yells. Hadrian nods. And the guards pull up the bar, allowing Jax and Simeon to rush inside. Before the guards slam the doors again, I get a brief glimpse of the dead still gathered in the hall, likely awaiting an audience with Her Majesty.
Any luck with the Shadebaiter?
Hadrian asks as Jax and Simeon approach.
Sparrow has just finished filling us in.
Afraid not.
Jax's eyes find me as he answers, and I'm struck by how much I've missed his gruff voice and roguish grin. I run down the steps without another thought and crash into his open arms. Suddenly thinking of Valoria's drawing of him, I break away quickly.
What's this?
He touches the new pin on my chest and frowns.
Oh,
Simeon grins as he realizes what the pin means.
Can you really be a sparrow and a serpent? What if you get the urge to eat yourself for breakfast?
Hadrian clears his throat, and Simeon falls silent as the prince begins to repeat much of what he's just told me. The news from Elsinore quickly wipes a smile from Simeon's face, and I wonder how much longer he'll be able to keep making jokes when so much is going wrong. Always, I hope. Everyone in the palace could use a bit of laughter. Meredy blinks at me with an unreadable expression, then strides to the doors. Now that my head is clear and I can think without the potion's influence, I still don't want her in the palace or anywhere else I happen to be. What if she accidentally says or does something that reminds me of Vander? Something that sends me right back to the calming potion. Yet I'm stuck with her. Hadrian is relying on me. And I won't let the people of Elsinore down, or King Wilding by association. The last thing I need are more dead Carthians on my conscience. And the longer I stand here, more people might be dying. Look after Valoria for me, I whisper to my friends. I know she'd protest if she could hear me. They nod solemnly, and Jax looks thoughtfully at the princess just a beat longer than normal. I'll be back as soon as I've killed the shades in Elsinore. And you, I add to Simeon, be good to Jax while I'm away. Don't tease him too much. I don't want to return from one massacre to find another. I ruffle Simeon's hair as he makes a face, and try to ignore the twinge in my chest as his eyes search mine like he's looking for any lingering traces of potion addiction. The sadness in his gaze when he looks at me, which the blue tonic never let me see, is just one more reason I'll fight to never touch another drop.
Be safe.
Jax presses his lips into a hard line, like he's holding back so much more. You too, I mutter, shoving my hands in my pockets. He and Simeon are the ones who will need to be on their guard, staying this close to the deaths and disappearances. I just hope Valoria and Daniel will stand by them while I can't. I take a last look at my friends before following Meridi and Lysandre back through the crowd of masked figures, knowing at least a few of the dead will be relieved or even glad to see me gone. Chapter 21. There's an old saying that sparrows always find their way home. I hope my tattoos or my name make me truly one of them, as this is the farthest I've ever been from everything I know. The moment our wagon wheels touch the base of the mountain pass marking the border of Grenweir and Elsinore provinces, my stomach does a flip. Maybe because the land here is unfamiliar and wild, the ancient pines taller and fuller than those in Grenweir. The air a touch colder, the few houses we pass made of drab wood or dark gray stone, no jewel bright roofs or potted citrus gardens to speak of. Or maybe it's because no matter where I go, I'm afraid I have no chance of living up to the new serpent pin on my tunic. It's Evander who should be taking jobs like this, not me. He'd have been thrilled to climb these wild, lonely mountains, would have gazed around with wide eyes and explored off the trail with an adventurer's heart, much like Lysandre does as he follows our wagon east and upward. I drink in every new sight for Evander, aided by the fading light of a blood-red sky seeping through the opening in the canvas-covered wagon. I know he'd be proud I've come this far. I clutch the pin tighter, closing my fist over it, and suck in a breath as the gold needle pricks my palm. I hold on through the pain, hoping somehow the little pin will infect me with the courage and strength of one worthy of wearing it, as opposed to the addict and poor friend I've been since Evander died. Odessa. Meridi waves a hand near my face, drawing my gaze. You look ill. What's on your mind? I blink at her in the dimness of the wagon hold for a moment before turning away. Toward the front of the wagon, where Master Simbri commands a team of sleek brown horses. Simbri had jumped at the chance to leave Grenweir when we knocked on her cottage door, even as tears were drying on her weathered face. She couldn't protect her prodigy, Evander, and she couldn't protect her king. Escaping to Elsinore on a dangerous and potentially deadly mission probably seemed like the only option left to her, the way the potion seemed like my only choice to distance myself from my nightmares. I see so much of myself in her. She might as well be my mother.
Merity shifts her weight, pulling me back to the present again as the wagon boards creak beneath her.
Thinking about that rogue necromancer again? Vane, she guesses. It's a safe bet. He's all I can think of since we left the throne room many hours ago.
Have you ever heard of anyone like him?
Maybe, she answers thoughtfully. I'm willing to bet he has a different sight than we do, which would mean he has a different power.
I blink at her. But Vaya only has 5 faces, so there are only 5 sights, 5 powers
that we know of, Merity interrupts. But when I was in Lorness, in one of the smallest villages buying supplies, I heard a rumor about a wild man with amber eyes who could change his shape at will. It was terribly painful for him, they said, and his cries in the forest near their village were often mistaken for a shade's. She pauses, fixing me with a thoughtful look. I don't know if it was true. I stayed near that village for weeks, camping and foraging with Lysander. And I never heard any sort of screaming. Still, there are many things we can't explain, aren't there?
Her face falls into shadow as she bows her head, searching through her bag for something.
Things that perhaps no one can.
I rub my goose-flesh-covered arms, hoping she's wrong about that last part. A loud, familiar crack rings in my ears as Merity bites into a handful of coffee beans.
You're on to something with these, she mutters thickly. Casmira could make a fortune selling them at harbors all over Carthia. I'll have to tell her.
With the heat of annoyance prickling the back of my neck, I snatch the bag of coffee beans from her grasp. She already does. I toss a handful in my mouth, settling the bag on my lap. Casually, like we've been friends forever, Merity leans over and reaches into the bag. She gasps as my fingers close over her wrist and I say through gritted teeth, "Quit taking things that aren't yours."
"I bought these," Merity snarls, tugging herself free with none of her usual composure.
"Well, you can't buy Casmira's friendship, or Valoria's, or mine." I throw the bag back at Merity, who doesn't even attempt to catch it. She's too busy trying to keep a scowl off her face. I close my eyes and lean against the wagon boards, thinking of the carefully folded drawing I found in my cloak pocket as we pulled away from Grenweir. 3 ink girls smiled up at me from the parchment. 3 perfect likenesses of me, Valoria, and Merity. I don't know what the princess was thinking when she drew it, but had it been a gift from anyone else, I'd have fed it to Lysander instead of shoving it back in my pocket.
"Do you know why I agreed to this job?" Merity says suddenly, cutting into my thoughts once again. "I certainly don't need the money."
She waits until I've cracked open one eye, giving her a reluctant stare before continuing.
"Lysander likes you."
I look past her, through the canvas opening, to see the grizzly lumbering in the wagon's wake.
"Good.
I like him too." Merity gives me an expectant gaze, like I'm supposed to say something more. She tilts her head in the silence.
"You really don't understand the depth of the bond between beast and master, do you?"
I shrug. She leans toward me and I instinctively draw back.
"Lysander doesn't like most people," she murmurs.
"But when he looks at you, he practically glows."
"I suppose you'd have to see it to really picture it. But the feelings he shows when you're around are the brightest shades of yellow and pink that tint the air around his fur."
I smile, trying to imagine it.
"What about when he's unhappy?"
"If he's sad, I see a lot of dark blues and greens. And if he's angry, reds. Or if he notices someone he really doesn't like, I see black all around him, like a stain or a silhouette of a second bear blurring with his... Merity pauses, frowning. Like today in the throne room, for instance. I sit taller, goose flesh rising on my arms. Someone there was upsetting him? She nods. Could have been anyone, for any reason. It happens often, and it would be impossible to know who unless we tested each person alone with him. I've just seen that he likes you. And he thinks Valoria is a bear cub. I can't help it. I smile. Merity nudges my side a moment later, and I glance back. She's put the bag of coffee beans on the floor between us. When we both reach in at the same time, the back of my hand brushes hers, and a shiver runs up my arm. It startles my heart into beating double. Her fingers curl around mine for a moment, warm and steady, before she jerks her hand away as though she's been stung. Shaking her head as though to clear it, she seems to recover herself. Here. Merity's lips twitch as she holds up a coffee bean. Catch. I open my mouth, but the bean hits me on the nose and skitters out of sight. Merity tries to disguise her derisive snort as a cough, making me hot all over. Oh, like you can do better, I growl, reaching into the bag. I throw three beans at once, and the last one lands on her outstretched tongue. You've probably been practicing, I mutter, trying not to look impressed. Let me try again. Certainly. Merity's eyes gleam. I'll go easy on you, one at a time. The first one hits my forehead. The second lands in my hair. The third sails over my head. Merity's tosses are terrible. After the fifth attempt, she stops. Try again. The wagon keeps hitting bumps. I frown. It's throwing off your aim. The wagon was rattling when I caught mine, too, Merity says evenly, with no hint of a smirk in her voice or otherwise. Some things are out of your control, like the path of the wagon and who's riding in it with you. Find a way to accept it, or give up.
You're one to talk, I lean toward her, wincing as the wagon wheels bang against a loose rock.
You act like you have everything under control. But you don't, and it drives you mad. She purses her lips, then folds her hands neatly in her lap. Every small action she makes seems so carefully planned.
You drive me mad, she says quietly.
Blushing, she adds quickly, louder. At least I'm in control of my own actions. At least I'm not so caught up in my own problems that I fail to see what's going on around me. There's nothing wrong with my eyes, thanks. Now toss me another coffee bean. Merity tilts her head, frowning as she grabs the coffee bag.
Are you always this stubborn?
Since the day I was born, I cross my arms. So get used to it or go back to Grenwere. Her eyes shining like hard stones, she says.
The Vander must have really loved you to put up with this every day.
My fist seems to have a mind of its own as it crashes into the wagon siding near Merity's perfect face. She's breathing hard, her eyes closed in the aftermath of the blow. Maybe she thought I was actually aiming to hit her.
Don't talk to me about him, I growl.
Is everything all right back there?
Master Simbri shouts. Fine, Merity and I answer at the same time, gazing steadily at one another. Our breathing is hot and rapid and almost stifling in the confines of the wagon's hold. The dampness of her breath collects on my lips, and I impatiently lick it away. Glaring at her,
I wish she'd take a swing back at me. Look, we might as well be honest. For some strange, twisted reason, you don't like me because I loved your brother. That's not it, Meredy scowls back, but her hands remain folded in her lap. What I don't like is that you're so selfish you don't notice anyone's pain but your own. When she speaks again, her voice is softer, more controlled. But because it's what my brother would have wanted, I'm going to stay with you and guard you until the danger has passed. Then we can go our separate ways. What are you talking about, anyone's pain but mine? Valoria really likes your necromancer friend Jax, but she's afraid you do too. So she doesn't say anything to him because she's more afraid of making you unhappy than she is of forever being unhappy herself. Meredy shakes her head, and a sudden wave of shame pummels me. Or Master Simbri. I bet you have no idea she's been drinking from a flask whenever she thinks no one's looking. You two aren't that different. And you certainly haven't bothered to notice. She pauses, biting her lip. Forget it. Really. I'm raving. I take a long look at her. Unshed tears cling to the corners of her eyes like dewdrops. If I'm barely keeping a grip on my sanity, it's a wonder she has any wits left about her after losing both Evander and Furiel. I should probably ask how she's holding up. Before I can get the words out, her long, cold fingers touch my shoulder. There's something else I need to tell you. It's about Prince Hadrian. Something he said in the throne room has been bothering me. I still don't say anything, but she's got my attention. He said King Wilding went to the kitchen for a honey cake just after we passed each other. But I was in the kitchen for well over an hour, eating and making breakfast for Lysander, and the king never arrived. There was some sort of commotion in the hall, though. You didn't go see what it was? Meredy frowns. I had my hands in a bowl of fish guts, and the cooks were busy preparing breakfast for the rest of the palace, but I definitely heard shouting. Maybe a server burned themselves while carrying a hot dish, I shrug. Or the prince was lying for some reason. Meredy's eyes search my face, so I drop my gaze. You don't believe me, do you? Maybe. I don't know what to think anymore. I rub my temples. I only knew Meredy for one brief year before she disappeared to Lorness and came back as someone else entirely. But I've known Hadrian since I started my necromancer training 7 years ago. 7 years of attending parties together and raising his relatives. In all that time, he's never given me a reason to doubt him. Even if you're right, I say slowly, and Hadrian was lying, that doesn't mean he would ever hurt King Wilding any more than he'd hurt me. Remembering how close those two have always been, I add, maybe Hadrian was covering something up for the king. Maybe His Majesty was on some secret errand, and he was attacked on his way to wherever. Meredy arches her brows. They're dark brown, not red like her long hair. I wonder why I hadn't noticed before, and why in Vaya's name I'm noticing now. Seeing as you know more about the Wildings than I do, she murmurs, I'll leave the worrying to you. Taking a deep breath, I try to silence the new, nagging unease in the pit of my stomach. Whether or not Meredy's right about Hadrian, she's raised a frightening point. Given the events of the last few weeks, I can't trust anyone anymore. I lean back against the wagon,
the night falling softly around me, complete with chirping crickets and a steady autumn breeze. Merity sighs. I bet we couldn't go a full day without arguing. After the coffee bean trick, the idea of beating her at something sounds rather appealing. I'll take that bet. If we argue, you win. And if we don't, I win. But what should we declare as the prize? She taps the scar on her cheek as she thinks. If I win, you have to promise never to insult me again. And if you win, I get enough coffee to last a lifetime, paid for by you. Merity's eyes flash with excitement. Deal. We shake on it. Her hesitant smile reminds me of Evander. But for the first time in a long while, remembering him doesn't make me feel like crumbling. Evander didn't like coffee. He said it tasted like burnt pan scrapings. Merity arches her brows. Slowly, a grin appears. He didn't like hills, either. After the time he ran down that big one at Grenweir Pond, the one with the sign at the top that said, "Danger, don't run," I grin back. The very same. Her laugh is like the rustle of birds' wings, soft and sweet. And I realize this is the first time I've heard it. He broke his arm, and Mother told him it was a good lesson in reading before running. How about the time he broke his ankle playing some ball game with Simeon? I never understood how that happened, but you were there, weren't you? I wish I'd known sooner how easy it would be, talking about Evander together. Dredging up these memories doesn't sting nearly as much when sharing them with someone who knows exactly what I've been through. Someone who lost their love, too. Jax and I spent most of our time in bed trying not to mention Evander. But it feels right here, now, with Merity. Oh, his ankle. That's a funny story. Merity's voice draws me back to her. The healers mended the break, but he woke up thinking he was still in the field with the ball and tried to... Merity's words are cut off when a shriek splits the night air. Sharp, unrestrained, eager. Merity and I exchange a glance. I'd recognize that sound anywhere. A shade is on the hunt, and we're the prey. Chapter 22. As the wagon comes to a sudden halt, I reach for my sword and strain my ears to detect what's happening over the horse's frightened whinnies and Lysander's hair-raising roar. Master Simbri yells something I can't quite make out. Her cry is abruptly cut short, and a cold weight settles in my chest as I imagine why. Something crashes into the wagon hold, making Merity and me jump as the wagon rocks violently from side to side. I dive toward the crate where we've carefully nestled several glass vials of liquid fire potion for the journey to Elsinore. Without those precious vials, we can't kill any shades. The crate's lid is ajar, and I hurry to push it back into place. Merity puts a hand on the crate's side to steady it as the wagon continues to shake. Another shriek nearly deafens me. The monster must be right on top of us. I draw my sword and stagger to my feet as a long, bony arm shreds the wagon's canvas covering and smashes the crate of fire potions. The wood splinters under Merity's hands, and she cries out. The vials scatter everywhere, some shattering, others rolling across the floor. The ones that break erupt into flames, and just like that, the wagon is done for. I drop my blade, trying to save as many of the potions as I can before the blaze in the wagon forces me out.
The shade knocks the few vials I manage to gather out of my hands. Its sharp, bare-boned fingers tangle in my hair as the vials hit the ground and burst into flames. Quick as lightning, the shade pulls me toward the huge hole it's created in the canvas. I dig my nails into its flesh, hoping it'll drop me. Instead, its grip tightens, its free hand closing around my neck. I can't breathe. My body shakes, and I start to panic as my vision blurs.
Let her go!
Merity shrieks, jabbing my sword into the fleshiest part of the monster's rotting arm. Looking pale, but not the least bit afraid despite the flames licking at her feet and the shimmering curtain of smoke filling the wagon. The shade's howl deafens me as it drops me. I push myself upright in time to see Lysander attack the monster from behind in a fury of claws and teeth. Quickly, I scan the mess of glass and tar-like potion burning on the wagon floor. All the vials are shattered. But we can still stop this shade. I've pushed one into a bonfire before, which means I can do it again. This time, with the aid of bigger, rapidly spreading flames.
Simbri!
I shout over the monster's screeches and Lysander's roars.
Simbri!
There's no answer. She must be hurt somewhere, at the mercy of the monster and the blaze. Before I deal with the shade, I need to get her away from the fire. Merity and I jump from the burning wagon together, our boots crunching as they touch down on the rocky mountainside. She offers me my sword, and I give her a nod of thanks. You have to run. Find a cave or somewhere you can hide, just in case. My words are lost to a fit of coughing. What about you? She demands, eyes narrowed against the smoke. It's my job to protect you, remember? I have to find Simbri. Then I'm going to stop this shade. Odessa! A burst of noise from the wagon cuts her off as the last of its canvas top collapses, sending up a shower of sparks that fleck our hair and arms, sharp as bee stings. There's no time to argue, I growl, edging farther away from the blaze. Just go! Merity calls out to Lysander, who's still in battle from the sound of things, as I dash to the front of the wagon, sweat already beading on my brow. The horses have fled, their tethers torn and trampled. Master Simbri slumps across the driver's seat, firelight dancing along a deep gash down the side of her face. At least her pulse is still strong. Master Simbri, I gently shake her shoulders. You have to hide. Our potions are gone, and I've got one nasty shade to shove into a fire. I shake her harder. And when that does nothing, I realize I'm going to have to carry her out of harm's way. I hang my sword at my side and slide my hands carefully under Simbri's back. With any luck, Lysander will force the shade into the flames while I'm struggling to lift a woman who weighs more than me. But the shade must have tired of the bear. Or worse. The monster plucks me off the ground, forcing me to drop Master Simbri. An arm, skeletal but strong, snaps off my belt as I reach for my sword, then lifts me toward its mouth as it unhinges its jaw. Even with my heart sticking in my throat, I manage to kick the shade in the spot where its eyes should be, hoping to make it stagger backward toward the fire. But all my kick does is make the monster gnash its teeth in what appears to be excitement. Icy breath blasts against my legs. The last time I came face to face with a shade, I remember my blood spilling out like buckets of paint. I remember that after the initial gut-wrenching agony, I didn't feel much at all. Only this time, there's no Daniel to heal my wounds. The first scream tears from my throat as the shade sinks its teeth into my leg.
and drops me with a piercing wail. I land face down, spitting out a mouthful of dirt and fallen leaves. I guess I taste worse than I look. As I scramble away from the monster, dragging myself toward my blade along the rocky ground by my elbows, a bright orange glow washes over me. The shade claws at itself, tugging on a burning arrow lodged in the softest part of its chest. But it's too late. It's already engulfed in flames. Several paces back from the wagon, looking immensely pleased with herself, is Merity. She drops her bow at Lysander's feet and rushes to my side. You're lucky I had Lysander carrying my things instead of storing them in the wagon. Are you hurt? No, not bad, anyway. But my head spins when I touch my aching lower leg, and my hand comes away slick with blood. Check on Master Cimbri. Frowning, Merity hurries to where Cimbri fell. I catch my breath, watching the shade melt into ash. There's something odd about the way it appeared on this particular mountain, when there are dozens of trails like this one leading into Elsinore, and the only people who know our chosen path to Abathel Castle are back in Grenweir. It's as if the monster knew exactly where we'd be tonight. I peer into the shadowy forest surrounding the wagon trail. But other than the lonely call of an owl, I don't see or hear anything. There's no sign of Vane or anyone else. The shade's skeletal body hisses and pops. Or maybe that's the wagon, blazing with all our spare clothes and rations inside. Rubbing the pin on my tunic, I stare into the fire and wonder if I did my duty as Serpent when I didn't make the kill. I didn't even help. Where'd you learn to shoot like that? I ask as Merity drags an unconscious Master Cimbri off the trail. I try to stand, but the stabbing pain in my leg forces me to stay down, and I crawl toward the woods until I can no longer feel waves of heat on my back. Lysander joins me, grumbling deep in his chest. In Lorness, Merity says at last. She props Master Cimbri against a tree, then rests with her hands on her knees to catch her breath. I learned from my teacher, so I could survive in the wild if Lysander was ever too sick or hurt to hunt for us. I'm surprised, is all. Merity's smile is bright like the moon. The world's full of surprises. You'd know that if you just looked around once in a while. Like Valoria. Did you even know she's an artist? She drew me the best picture I've ever seen. Somehow, she still manages to irritate me moments after saving my life. I'm aware of her talents, seeing as she was my friend first. What's the picture of? We need to get out of these woods soon, she mutters, apparently ignoring my question. She's right, though. The blaze is spreading, catching on dry leaves and twigs, and blackening the ground between us and the charred wagon. There's no sign that a shade was ever here, thanks to this serpent and her questionably loyal protector. Can you walk if you lean on me? Merity extends a hand and I take hold of her. Have you ever considered that maybe raising the dead isn't worth the risk? She asks quietly. That it causes more suffering than healing? All the time, I want to say. Ever since Evander died. Since she asked me to raise Firial. Before I can reply, I hear a faint voice drifting on the night wind. Anyone out there? It sounds like a man's deep tone. I put a finger to my lips, looking around, then point
to a lone torch bobbing up the mountainside from slightly east of the direction we were headed in before the attack. Lysander growls as the torch bobs nearer. Merity puts a hand between his furry shoulders, calming him within a few heartbeats. We wait in silence until the light of the wagon fire lifts the cloak of darkness from the haggard face of a man some years our senior. He has a bow strapped to his back and an axe hanging from his belt, but his eyes are kind. Merity and I exchange a glance, and she nods. If we're wrong, I can take him, even with my leg a bloody mess. Over here! I shout, revealing our location. Merity waves a hand, echoing my call. It takes only a moment for him to navigate around the spreading fire. When he sees the condition we're in, he says,
Don't worry, I'm here to help.
And hurries to check Master Simbri's pulse. He passes me his torch so he can lift Simbri into his arms.
Is the bear friendly?
He grunts, eyeing Lysander. Not even Merity's calming influence keeps Lysander completely quiet with a stranger so close. And I think back to what she said about him not liking most people. Merity gives a terse smile. Mostly.
I saw the fire from my cabin, he adds. Not many folk pass through these parts, so I thought I'd better come check.
His voice dies away as he gets a look at the gold pin on my chest. He offers me a crude bow.
Can't remember the last time there was a necromancer in my woods.
Shifting his gaze to Merity, he adds.
Or a beastmaster. Now, let's get your friend here to a healer. Abathil Castle's the place you'll want, just down that hill. And there's plenty of time to tell me what happened here along the way.
We hurry past the fire into the black night while I describe the shade attack as quickly as I can. It's too fresh in my mind for me to want to dwell on it for longer than is necessary. The hunter merely grunts in response. What? Merity snaps.
There were footprints in the woods near here. All from the same set of boots by the look of it,
the man says thoughtfully.
I figured whoever attacked you fled the scene after they set your wagon ablaze. Thought I might have to use this.
He taps his axe hilt. Merity's eyes meet mine, searching. It's vain. It has to be. Somehow he knew our path, and he brought his pet shade with him to stop us. Chapter 23 Abathil Castle is really more of a squat fortress, built into the stone of the mountain on which it rests, overlooking a valley far below. By night, it appeared crouched like a wary beast guarding against our approach. I shivered as we were ushered through a dark side entrance. But by morning, waking in a guest chamber filled with sunlight, it doesn't seem much different from the palace in Grenwere. And it has a better view. Throwing off the blankets, I use the wash basin on the far wall to scrub off the blood, dirt, and soot I was too tired to deal with last night. Baroness Abathil was determined to attend to our every comfort, summoning a healer who deserved to be paid his weight in gold for making my leg good as new, and offering us 3 rooms on the top floor of the castle. I wish I had fresh clothes to change into, but since everything from the wagon burned, I throw on last night's mud and blood-stained uniform of black trousers and a tunic. At least I still have my cloak with Valoria's drawing tucked in the pocket. I take a quick look at it before heading into the hallway, my stomach rumbling. The Baroness seems like the type to put out a lavish breakfast spread, and I plan to eat my fill before we journey deeper into Elsinore. I stride down the corridor, turn a corner, and walk right into Merity, her forehead banging against mine. We break apart, rubbing our heads, and I hastily look away to hide a grin. Merity clears her throat.
You should have asked me for a change of clothes. I brought a few extras. They're not much, but at least they're clean.
Oh. I take in her simple tunic, the color of Lysander's fur, and her deerskin trousers, which are a damn sight nicer than last night's battle clothes. She's lucky she has a bear to carry all her things, like a giant pack mule. I wonder if they managed to house him in the stables, and how they kept him from eating the horses.
You saved my life, I blurt. That's twice now, if you count keeping me prisoner.
Just doing my job.
Merity rubs the scar in her cheek, like she does when she's nervous or lost in thought. Suppressing a grin, I mutter,
thanks, my humble savior.
I start down the stairs toward the noise of what I hope is a dining room, pausing for Merity to follow.
It's not your fault you couldn't stop the shade, you know.
She reaches my side and keeps pace with me, stealing a sideways glance when she thinks I'm not looking.
It kept going after you, she adds. You had no hope of killing it. It was like you were its only target, and
I stop cold in the middle of a glittering tiled hallway. The key to killing them is taking them by surprise. I finish the thought for her. Merity nods, then waves at someone over my shoulder.
Good morning,
a handsome woman in a fine gown calls, sweeping toward us. The Baroness.
And thank you again, on behalf of all of Elsinore, for slaying our monster.
Her weary gray eyes meet mine.
I've had the cooks pack you plenty of breakfast, so I hope you're hungry.
She tosses her long, dark braid over her shoulder and checks the fastenings of her cloak.
Everything's waiting in the carriage. This way, please.
Merity takes a step forward, but I hold her back with a hand on her arm. Where are we going? I ask, careful to keep my voice pleasant. Baroness Abathel flashes a dazzling smile.
On a tour of our valley, my dear Master Odessa.
Her smile dims slightly as she adds,
Master Simbri declined to join us. She may need a second visit from the healer, but for now, she's enjoying breakfast in her chamber.
I'm afraid we don't have time for a tour, I say slowly, forcing myself to smile back. I don't mean to sound ungrateful. You've been more than generous, but we're here to find the shade that's been attacking Elsinore, as you know. And after that, we're needed back in Grenweir City, where Jax and Simeon are probably overwhelmed with restless dead in the wake of news about the king's disappearance spreading. At least it doesn't seem like anyone here has heard of what befell our leader, and if they haven't, I don't want to be the one to share it.
I insist, the Baroness says a moment later, her voice still cheerful. You deserve to see what your brave actions have protected, Master Necromancer.
I glance down at the pin on my tunic. Killing that shade had nothing to do with bravery and everything to do with survival, Lady Abathel. With a glance at Merity, I add, It was my guard who killed the monster. Not me, so you should be thanking her.
And a tour sounds like a lovely way to do that,
Merity says, covering the awkward moment. The worried look she gives me as we follow the Baroness to the carriage house is the only way I know she doesn't like this waste of time any more than I do. 2 hours and 4 sticky buns later, though, I have to admit, the tour around the valley isn't so bad. There are pastures where sheep wander aimlessly like little white clouds, a small lake, and a wide green field where 4 weather mages stand side by side, dressed in slick, shimmering robes that remind me of fish scales
as they cast a rainbow of light on their surroundings. Moving as one, the mages draw water from a passing cloud and shower the leafy green crops around them. It's